We continue with our series of tales of the Baal Shem Tov. This time, we will tell two stories, both about the Baal Shem Tov, and both from very, very different areas or lives of many. The scholar of once spent Shabbos, the grandson of the Baal Shem Tov. And as mentioned earlier, the Alter Rebbe would call the Baal Shem Tov, for he was his spiritual inheritor, while Rav Baruch Meshebish was actually a physical grandson of the Baal Shem. While they were at the table, Rav Baruch asked the scholar Rav to tell a story of the Baal Shem Tov. For the scholar Rav was one of the Ziknei Talmidei HaBaal Shem Tov, one of the few and last surviving disciples of the Baal Shem Tov, who was still alive at that time. And this is a story which the scholar Rav then told. Once happened, said the scholar Rav, while he was in a deep conversation with the Baal Shem Tov, that two people from a certain town came to the Baal Shem. One of the individuals was the local rabbi, the Rav of the town, and the other was one of the Balabatim, one of the householders. The rabbi had come to ask the Baal Shem Tov whether he should marry off his son to the daughter of this man, who was nudging him, who begged for the smack persistently. And why not ask the Baal Shem Tov? The rabbi explained that this Balabais, this householder, was an extremely ordinary fellow. In fact, he had once been a simple water carrier, and in the course of time, had become wealthy. When this householder had first conceived of the idea that it would be wonderful to have his daughter marry the rabbi's son, he hired a certain school teacher, and he gave him the princely sum of 50 ruble to visit the rabbi every day, day in and day out, in order to propose the match. He told the man, "I'm giving you 50 ruble, and the condition is that do not take no for an answer. Don't take no the first time, the second time, the third time, or even the 50th time. Keep on going every day." On his first visit, the rabbi refused outright to hear of such an idea. But the Mulamed never forgot what he was being paid for, and he persisted faithfully in his daily mission. On one occasion, he conveyed a new message to persuade the rabbi. He said, "You know, not only am I proposing this match on behalf of this Balabais's householder, but the man is prepared to give Nadan a dowry of 2,000 silver ruble, a veritable fortune to the young couple. And moreover, a gift of 1,000 silver ruble to the rabbi." So it was a win-win situation. At this stage, the rabbi saw that he stood very little chance of shaking off these unwelcome advances as they kept on coming and coming and coming, and the ante kept on being upped and upped. And he decided that the time had come to travel to the Baal Shem Tov, together with this Nudnik, together with this congregant of his, this Balabas, and find out what the Baal Shem Tov thinks about it. The Baal Shem Tov asked, is this householder a Yerushamayim, a God-fearing individual?" "He is," answered the rabbi. "If so," said the Baal Shem Tov, "then this is a fine match." And so saying, he took out a tichel, he took out a handkerchief, and each of the parties who were from Kabul Kinyan, they held on to it according to custom, and they confirmed the Kinyan, the transaction that they were going to have the rabbi's son marry the daughter of this householder. Baal Shem Tov wished them both Mazel Tov and gave them his blessings for the journey home. As soon as they had left the Baal Shem Tov's presence, the Baal Shem Tov turned to the Rav of Skola, who had witnessed the whole episode, and said, "Olam Halitzonus, the world of scoffing, can make a fine match. It can be a fine shatchan. Can be a fine matchmaker." So puzzled was the scholar Rav by these strange words, and so curious was he to learn what the Baal Shem Tov was hinting at. And of course, he wasn't going to ask the Baal Shem himself out of respect, that he decided then and there to seek out the visiting rabbi in his lodgings in order to get to the bottom of the matter. What did the Baal Shem Tov in the world mean by this? When the rabbi heard from his mouth what the Baal Shem Tov had said, the rabbi was overawed and exclaimed, "Now I know where I was." He then proceeded to tell the scholar of that he had once dreamt that he was going from village to village, doing the rounds, as was a custom in those days, that the rabbi would be paid by the pittance, and he would collect gifts of farm produce, which the Jewish peasants offered him, and this way, somehow, he was supposed to live. On his way through one township, he came to the door at the back of a synagogue, which was filled with learned folk of all ages, who were deep in scholarly discussion. As he listened in more closely, it seemed to him that the particular Talmudic argument, which they all apparently found so difficult and so problematic, presented no real difficulty at all. He offered his explanation of the subject to the young men who stood nearby, and they in turn passed it on to the older scholars who were further up in the shul, until it reached the most venerable sages who occupied the places of honor in the front row. They approached him, looked him in the face, and one of them said, "Is this the ignoramus who mixes in scholarly argument?" The rabbi left the synagogue immediately and said to his wagon driver, "It's clear that we have nothing more to do in this place. Let's move on." When they reached the next township, the rabbi entered the synagogue again, and in his imagination, lived it through exactly the same episode a second time. Again he had the answer. Again the answer was transferred from row to row. And again the sages looked at him and said, "Is this the ignoramus who mixes in scholarly arguments?" They drove on to a third township, where the whole of the same spectacle presented itself once again. Except that this time the rabbi was approached by the oldest of the sages, who looked him in the eye and then said to his colleagues, "And this ignoramus still refuses to marry off his son to the daughter of that householder." The rabbi awoke with his dream with a troubled spirit and decided at once to journey to the Baal Shem Tov. It was this dream that had led him finally to go to the Baal Shem Tov. And at this moment, when the Rav of Skola had brought him the words of the Rebbe about Olam Halitzonus, the word of scoffing, it became clear to him that heaven had ordained that he be cast into the scoffing and imaginings of the world of dreams in order that he should consent to this shidduch, since, although it seemed very unlikely, it was indeed a match made in heaven. The story that follows is also about a dream, but of a very, very different nature. When Rav Meir, the great-grandfather of Rav Hillel Parikshar, the famous chosid of the Tzemach Tzedek, and to himself the Tzemach Tzedek called but half a chosid, because the other half was Rebbe. When this Rebbe Meir, Rebbe Hill's great-grandfather, was a youth, he studied together with a dear friend called David. Eventually, each of the young men married in their hometown, and both were supported by their wealthy shvers, by their wealthy fathers-in-law, according to the custom that the fathers-in-law would support the scholarly son-in-laws in order to enable them to continue their studies, which Rav Meir and Rav David did together. After some years had passed, Rav David suddenly disappeared. Word soon arrived that he had been kidnapped, as it were, by the sect. That is, he had joined the brotherhood of the Hasidim of the Baal Shem Tov, which in that place and at that time was anathema. His father-in-law, Rav David's father-in-law, was horrified. He set out to speak to his errant son-in-law, and in vain tried to persuade him to leave his new evil path. Returning home, he first attempted to convince his daughter to ask for a divorce, promising her a husband who would be far better than this scoundrel. However, the young woman would not hear of such a suggestion, for she knew what a saintly individual her husband David truly was. Indignant, her father promptly disowned her of all his possessions and drove her out of his house. She accepted her change of fortune with fortitude and patiently endured a few years of terrible poverty. Until one day two men arrived in a wagon to take her to Nikolaev, where her husband David had just been appointed the rabbi of that honorable city. Meanwhile, Rav Meir's father-in-law had passed away, leaving him his business interests. And now Rav Meir divided his time between Torah study and business. And so it happened that Rav Meir had once had to travel to a fair in a far-off city. And entering the inn where he was to stay, he saw a group of people who were exceedingly joyous. "What is the occasion of your joy?" he asked them. "Why are you all so happy? I've rarely seen people this happy." "Why," they answered, "the David of Nikolaev is staying here." Assuming that this was his boyhood friend, Rav Meir asked where he was at the moment and was told that he was in his room finishing his morning prayers, finishing davening shacharis. He went upstairs eagerly, and as soon as the door opened, the two old friends embraced, hugged, and kissed. "Tell me the truth," said Rav Meir. "What gave you the urge to go to see the Baal Shem Tov?" "I'm sure you remember," his friend answered, "that in the days when we used to study together, we once came to the conclusion that although we studied a great deal, we were masmidim, we were diligent, we constantly were learning, still we did not feel that this was a devotion to the Torah, lishma, for its own sake, for a holy purpose. A little later, I heard that in the brotherhood of the Baal Shem Tov, they do achieve Torah lishma. They study Torah in the most pristine state. So I decided to join them." "But why didn't you tell me of your plan?" Rav Meir asked Rav David. "I was afraid you might not agree," answered Rav David. "And if you wouldn't go, and you said no, then I would not be able to go either." "One more question," asked Rav Meir of Rav David. "I know you well. Tell me, please, what is it that you saw there that made you stay with the Baal Shem Tov? What is it that made you for his chassid?" "I'll tell you the truth," said Rav David. "When I first came to the Baal Shem Tov, I didn't find what I was looking for. But the Hasidim there wanted me to stay near the Baal Shem Tov anyway. They started by telling me that if I would stay there until Friday, don't leave right away, you just came. Stay till Friday, Erev Shabbos, and make the effort to be in the Baal Shem Tov's presence when he recites Shir HaShirim, the Song of Songs. And if you do that, then they assured me that I would find what I had come to seek. I made the effort, I stayed till Shabbos, and I saw to it that I be in the Baal Shem Tov's presence for Shir HaShirim. And the Hasidim helped me manage to do what they had suggested. And yes, I heard something sublime and something special when I heard that Shir HaShirim. I felt how his words, the holy Baal Shem Tov's words, made a tumult in all the higher worlds. But even though I saw this and I understood this, it still did not grab me. It did not capture my soul. I was not his. And I was ready to leave. The Hasidim then said, wait until the day on which the Baal Shem Tov observes the yard site after one of his parents. On the eve of that day, they said, he walks up and down the room all night long, reciting the entire Mishnayos by heart. This, they assured me, would certainly captivate me. This would be something which would make me into a chosid of the Baal Shem Tov. And so, I waited until the eve of the yard site, and came the eve of the yard site, I hid in the Baal Shem Tov's room, and what I saw was truly remarkable. But this wasn't it. It's not what I wanted. It's not what I desired. I felt something was still lacking. I still wasn't his. And then the Hasidim told me that I should wait until the following night. For all that day, that means the day of the yard site, the Baal Shem Tov fasted. And then at nightfall, he invited his older Talmidim for a special soda, a special mystical meal. At that meal, they assured me, it was impossible that he not reach my soul. But they told me, very seriously, that I should see to it that I not fall asleep there. Because for some reason, slumber would often overcome those who were at the table on that occasion. Hearing this, Rav David told Rav Meir, I prepared myself by day by getting a very, very good nap. And I took plenty of coffee and I was up with caffeine and did whatever I can to make sure that I would not fall asleep at the table. And at that yard site mystic meal, after the day of the yard site, I took my place at the Fabrengen, at the gathering. The Baal Shem Tov sat at the head of the table, with Hasidim all around him. And he began to expound, he began to speak about Kavonas HaMikveh, the Kabbalistic meditations which accompany the ritual immersion in the mikveh. As he was speaking, one of his Hasidim addressed him and said, Rebbe, does not the Arizal, Rabbi Yitzchak Luria of Saint Memory, explain the Kavonas HaMikveh in a different fashion? Hearing this question, the Baal Shem Tov leaned his head back. His face, which while speaking had been like a fiery flame, suddenly lost its color. The Baal Shem Tov grew pale. His eyes stood out, bulging, prominent. He looked like one who had passed on. At that moment, said Rav Dovid, I was overcome by a deep, deep slumber, which no amount of effort could ward off. Try as I might, I couldn't help myself, and I fell asleep. In my sleep, I saw myself and found myself in some city, which was filled with people who were hurrying all in one direction. Everybody's hurrying to get to a specific place. I asked them, where are you all going? What's the rush? And they told me that the Baal Shem Tov would soon be delivering a discourse. He would be saying a mimer. And everybody wanted to hear it. And of course, I ran in with him. And we came to this beautiful building. Inside, we stood at the head, two cheers. Who are these two cheers for? I asked. One is for the Baal Shem Tov, and one is for the Arizal, I was told. I managed to push my way through and stand near the cheer of the Baal Shem Tov, who soon began to speak about Kavonis HaMikveh, the Kabbalistic meditations of the mikveh. When the Baal Shem Tov had completed his mimer, he had completed his discourse, the Arizal asked him a series of questions, each of which the Baal Shem Tov answered. The challenge of the Arizal was fully met by the Baal Shem Tov, until it was clear that the Arizal wholly accepted the mimer and the exposition that had been given by the Baal Shem Tov on the intentions of immersion in the mikveh. At that moment, said Rav Dovid, I awoke from my sleep and saw that I was sitting at the table of the Baal Shem Tov with all his disciples. The color was returning to the Baal Shem Tov's face and was becoming once again fiery. Again, the Baal Shem Tov began to deliver the mimer about Kavanas HaMikveh, about the meditations of the mikveh. And again, the same Talmud asked him, Rebbe, does not the Arizal explain these Kavanas differently? Upon hearing the question for the second time, the Baal Shem Tov turned to me and said, Dovid, stand up and testify to what you have just seen. And at that moment, Rav Dovid said to his dear friend Rav Meir, the Baal Shem Tov captured my soul. When Rav Meir heard these words, he sent his assistant home with all his merchandise, journeyed straight from the fair with his friend to see the Baal Shem Tov, and in due course also became one of the outstanding Talmidei HaBaal Shem, one of that sacred circle of those very wonderful people who made up the Geburim and the Tzadikim and the Chavraya Kadisha, the Holy Assembly of the Holy Baal Shem Tov.